Yes, welcome along, folks. Wednesday night, Richo's not far away from being in the house. You can join us on the Harcourts open line. It's 13 13 32 for all things real estate. Speak to Harcourts. If you want to pop a question on the board for Richo, give us a call now on 13 13 32. This is Sports Day for Red Energy. It's born and bred in Melbourne. And, of course, Kia, the all-new Kia Sorento has landed. Welcome to you, Scoop. What news have you got for us in the footy world?
Hello, Jared. Looking forward to talking to Richo about all things footy. But contracts at this time of the year are always interesting. Jeremy Finlayson has signed a three-year contract extension.
Okay.
Rival clubs thought as recently as this week, Jared, that he was gettable, but he's now off the table. So he was out of contract. He's done. Aiden Corr was out of contract. He's done. He's going to North Melbourne. He's nominated them as his preferred club of choice. And yet, Jeremy Cameron remains unsigned. Now, despite saying in July on SEN Breakfast that he loved the club and he expected once the contract freeze was up, he'd be re-signed, there are people at GWS who are confused, Jared, as to why he hasn't re-signed. He had a contract offer on the table at the start of the year.
I don't think that'd be a problem, Scoop, if he was playing really, really good football.
That's right. Well, the last player in his realm, in as far as what they're paid, to put his negotiations on hold at the end of the year, at the start of a final year was?
The captain.
No, well.
Camellia.
No, think Richmond.
The
star
Dusty.
Player.
Dusty.
And what did Dusty Martin do that year?
He had a blinder.
Yeah, an unbelievable year. And they basically had to pay him whatever he wanted. Jeremy Cameron's done the reverse of that. Mm. Now, that's not to sound harsh on him, but he's just had a tough year. He's had a brutal year. He's kicked 24 goals. Last year, he kicked 75 goals. Mm. Now, Alex McDonald, who I've made contact with today, have gone back to GWS, his manager, with a counter-offer, and the two are a fair distance apart.
Well, maybe they've learnt the lesson from the skipper and the fact that you just don't pay people what they are demanding. You have to work within a salary cap. And the Steve Canelio contract, you could argue, may well cost them Zach Williams.
So Jeremy Cameron has repeatedly told the Giants this year that he's not interested in going anywhere else. Mm. You know, there's been talk about Essendon, there's been talk about Geelong. He's never considered it, is what he's told the club, and they take him on face value. So why then, Jared, would you hold out? There's only one answer, isn't there?
What is it?
More money.
Well, possibly he's had a late change of mind. I mean, they've been in a very difficult place in recent times, the Giants. And before we go to Richo, any other updates on Adam Uze? You told us last night that the Demons were interested in pinching.
Still interested.
Okay, it's time for this bloke. Richo man. If you want to talk to Richo, get on the Harcourts open line right now and you can have a chat to the great Richmond wingman. Welcome to you, Richo.
Great to be here, Jared and Scoop, and can't wait for this weekend. Can you believe we're into the last round of the season? I'm just wrapped. We got there first and foremost because we all had our doubts 2 or 3 months ago, but it's turned into a really exciting season. There's three or four live games on this weekend to look forward to, so can't wait to get into that.
And Richo, would you have thought a few weeks ago that, or maybe a month ago, that the Tigers were in the box seat to finish fourth? I know they still have to win, but I mean, all things being equal, they're going to finish in the top four, and they probably didn't look like it for a while.
Now, I'll be honest with you, Scoop, because you know I like the ladder predictor, as you do, and I've been doing it the last 3 or 4 weeks, and it was always going to hinge, more than likely, and let's not take for granted the weekend, because the Crows are playing really good footy at the moment, won their last 3 games, but you'd assume a team going for a top four spot would be able to tick that one off. It was always probably going to rely on that Geelong game. And the way Geelong were playing, you probably didn't tip Richmond in that one. So that was the big one. But you can't have a letdown this week, because both of the teams below them, in the Cats and the Eagles, have got winnable games, obviously, with West Coast playing North Melbourne and the Cats playing the Swans.
Doesn't look like the eight will change to me, Richo, but it's fair to say the game arguably swings on the Western Bulldogs Frio match. That won't be easy, given that Fremantle, if you take a ladder over the last 8 weeks, are in sixth position.
They've been really good. But you know what? The Giants have to come out on Friday night, and if they're fair dinkum, make a big statement and put a bit of pressure on. Put a bit of pressure on the D's the next day, and then put a bit of pressure on the Dogs on Sunday night at 6 o'clock up in Cairns. Might depend on the weather up there. We've had the three or four games I've seen up this year, it's either been wet and it's been windy in all of the games. And I think you're guaranteed a bit of wind up there at night. If it gets wet, we know Freo have been so good defensively. It's not going to be easy. The Dogs like to flip the ball around with hands. We know that. If it gets wet and slippery, that might just take their game plan back a little bit. So that's a huge game,
Jared,
that one. Freo have been great.
You're Mr. Fremantle. You saw this coming way before anyone else. Can they beat the Dogs?
Oh, absolutely they can beat the Dogs. Yeah, I'm not saying they will, but they...
No, I know.
They have got one of the best sides going around at the present time. If you have a look at their last 2 months' form...
Form-wise, yeah.
They are in sixth position. I think it's over the last 8 weeks. They've got a terrific midfield. Mm-hmm. They've got a really stable back line.
Got a good system.
Their forward line is probably their weakest point, but Tabner's really come on.
Hogan kicked four last week.
Hogan kicked four. Everyone was kicking four last week against the Kangaroos, but they have been one of the great... excitement stories in football this season.
And what they've got is that big-bodied midfield. So if it gets wet and the game is slowed down, at Fife, Mundy, we know they're so good around the footy. And the way the Dogs beat teams at the moment is they get in, they get numbers at the contest, and then they flip it around so well with their hands, teams just can't get the ball off them. But if it's wet and slippery in Cairns and windy, that game's going to be very interesting.
So let's say for the argument's sake, Richo, the eight stays as it is. Melbourne miss out by a game and possibly by just percentage. Where do you see them as a season? Give us a wrap-up of their year.
Melbourne, I think we thought they would bounce back and play finals. I know I had them in the eight at the start of the year. I just thought if you looked at their list and the talent available there and their ability to win the footy in close, I just thought with Stephen May in the back line and Lever back there, I thought that they'd be able to play finals. So if they don't make the finals and they miss out, you have to say that they haven't ticked the box this year. And not super disappointing, but they'd be very disappointed if they now miss finals because they're in the box seat 3 or 4 weeks ago and they dropped games they shouldn't have in the run home. I thought they were a Monty a month ago to play finals. If you looked at their run home and the form they were starting to create, you definitely thought they were going to make it. So those two games they dropped could be really costly.
Given the week they've had, the Giants have been in the microscope. We're looking forward to chatting to former captain Phil Davis. He's going to join us in a few minutes' time. But it's unlikely that they make it, no matter whether they win or they lose, after an unbelievable week, an explosive decision to drop Cornelio. They should have beaten Melbourne last week, given the amount of ball they had inside their forward 50. But Melbourne produced a fantastic come-from-behind victory. It's almost, like, it's not crisis time, but, it smells a bit like one up there.
Yeah, I mean, they've re-signed the coach. We know he's going to be there. We know there's still plenty of talent. A few injuries here and there and a bit of continuity didn't help them, but which teams haven't had that during the year? Most teams have had periods where they've had good players out, and you need to be able to cover that. And you just continually look at the players they have around the football, and most of their problems this year have been being able to get it inside 50 enough. And when you've got the talent that they have inside 50, that's not good enough. They should have been a team that was a high inside 50 team and a high forward half team with the talent at their disposal around the footy and inside 50. And they've played the game in the wrong half of the ground most of the year, and it's hard to work out how that's happened.
Phil Davis is just about to join us. We've spoken about Fremantle. Just a word a piece, if you can, on Carlton and on the Bombers.
Bombers more disappointing than Carlton, and probably moving forward, you look at them and you're more worried about where they're going. I still think Carlton will be pushing for finals next year. They had a chance to make it this year. They didn't because they gave up runs too often against the opposition. Good teams don't do that, but really good key position talent. And De Koning coming in late in the year showed that they've got a really good young ruckman who's going to have a presence. Mackay looked good. We know their key backs. Wiedering is solid. Jones is solid. They need to get another midfielder in there over the summer, maybe Zach Williams, maybe Brad Crouch. If they do that, I reckon they're looking good for next year. I'm not sure where Essendon are moving into next year, though.
Geez, I reckon a couple of clubs would be disappointed they didn't have a go at De Koning a year or two ago, Jared.
How good's he look? Yeah.
He looks a real star on the way through.
Matty Richardson here for McDonald's. This is Sports Day for Kia. The all-new Kia Sorento has landed, and we are powered by Red Energy. Jared, myself, Richo, will be joined by Phil Davis from GWS next. Welcome back to Sports Day. Jared Healy, Matthew Richardson and Sam McClure with you for Red Energy. Born and bred in Melbourne, that's Red Energy. And Kia, the all-new Kia Sorento has landed. Well, it's been a pretty tough year, Jared, for GWS. They are on the precipice potentially of missing the eight this year after playing in a grand final last year. And it's been a difficult year for their leadership as well. Captain Stephen Canelio has been dropped and their former skipper Phil Davis has endured a pretty tough year with injury as well.
Indeed, and we're lucky enough to have Phil Davis on the line. Welcome to you, Phil. Thanks for your time tonight on Sports Day.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me. Nice to be on.
How's the body, first and foremost?
Yeah, no, Jared's going okay. Unfortunately, yeah, just a bit too sore in that knee to play out the year, which was very frustrating. I thought I was going to get back, and then a couple of mishaps, and yeah, unfortunately, rest was the only cure, and put a line through 2020, which was extremely disappointing, but, you know, I should be right in the hopefully the next 4 to 6 weeks, and you know, you start looking at 2021 straight away.
So, Phil, was the reason to leave the hub and come back to Sydney quickly in order to get the surgery out of the way as quickly as you can and give yourself the best chance for the pre-season?
Yeah, that was the main reason, Sam. You know, these days pre-season is so important with the timeline of that, as well as, you know, one of the things was to potentially have surgery in Queensland so I could stay in the hub, but then you run into other issues down the track with follow-up appointments, etc. And with the borders being shut at the moment, you can't exactly, you know, duck up to see the surgeon, etc. So then it comes back to where am I going to be in 6, 8, 10 weeks' time? That's more likely Sydney. You know, there are all these, you know, administration factors that come into play. And, you know, first and foremost, it's to get surgery done as soon as possible so that, you know, you can have the least interrupted plan going into 2021.
You're in an interesting spot, Phil. There's a fascination, I reckon, in the footy world about the Giants. And when you're in the bubble, it's probably difficult to assess as much as when you're outside of the bubble. Well, you've been both inside and outside. Do you understand this fascination with the Giants, given the way they were formed, given the success that you've had, the almost premiership success, and then this unbelievable season where you've been sort of flat for a fair period, a couple of ups, and then at this stage you've finished the year making this incredible decision to drop your captain?
Yeah, I think it's definitely been a narrative that, you know, you haven't been able to escape as a member of the Giants. You know, I understand how the club was built and all those facets, you know, led to, you know, a certain dialogue that followed us throughout, and that predominantly revolved around not only, you know, talent, but also a part of it of which, you know, talent always outweighed substance and issues of, you know, keeping players, and that was always flying around. Then we got to the period where, you know, the last sort of 4 years when we've been at the pointy end of the table and haven't been able to get it done, and, you know, that's left a lot of people bewildered, and, you know, it's come with it. And I guess from my point of view, you know, it's a hard competition. It's a ruthless competition. And, you know, we obviously haven't done enough right for a long enough period of time to have the ultimate success. And that's something we've been striving for. And then if you look at, you know, current day, you know, some of our behaviours this year have been extremely disappointing. You know, we've been up and we've been down, as you say, and that's not what good teams do. Good teams aren't inconsistent like we are. And, you know, and then, you know, all of a sudden, you know, Stephen is omitted last week, and, you know, that's obviously a big exclamation mark. But if you actually looked across our form as a team the whole year, as you stated before, you know, we have been inconsistent, and it hasn't been good enough to land us in a position where, you know, our fate's in our own hand.
Before I hand you over to Richo for a couple of questions, can I ask you just to explore that, I guess, inconsistency of form, and whether or not you can put your finger on it? Because from the outside, I saw you play an amazing game against Geelong. I know Geelong kicked in accurately, and the margin probably flattered you to a small degree. But in round one, before you had the break, you looked as if you were ready to take some sort of revenge on the big loss in the grand final. Then we had the 8 or 9 weeks off in the break. Do you feel as if the break you lost your way a little bit, or did you train really hard? Were you concerned at all about how you came back from the break?
Yeah, it's a good question, Joe, because I must admit, I thought our pre-season was outstanding. You know, I thought the boys came back in terrific shape in November and December last year, and, you know, we had a lot of blokes running PBs, everyone was in terrific shape. We had a really good pre-season, almost faultless, and then we had a really great NAB Cup campaign, or sorry, JLT Cup campaign. And then, yeah, round one was terrific. I thought we played a really good style. You know, there were a few things that we had to tinker with. So everything was sort of rosy at that point. Mm. And then, yeah, the break was a fascinating one, because I must admit, we trained really hard. Like, our sort of numbers when we came back were really good. But I probably think, you know, you can probably see in our first two games against North Melbourne and the Doggies after that, we weren't sharp compared to the other teams. And that's something that I found a little bit bewildering, just because of the physical shape that we were in. I thought we'd all done the work, you know, to a hugely accountable level over the break. But that mental sharpness and ferocity that we'd showed in round one and the back half of last year wasn't there, which was really disappointing. And I guess that's probably been the thing that's fluctuated. But with that, you know, our confidence has probably fluctuated, which is disappointing, because you don't want to be a side that relies on confidence. But we've probably just fluctuated more than we'd like. And to pinpoint that has been really challenging. That's something that we're working feverishly behind the scenes on, is trying to work out where that's gone, because I thought we found a really nice formula for the last sort of 5-6 weeks of last year. But consistency is what we're striving for. And, you know, the good teams, you know, I look at West Coast on the weekend, they probably had 5 or 6 of their best 10 not on the field. Mm. And they find a way to win, and they're just a super consistent football club. So are Richmond. You know, that's something that we're really striving for. So we're putting a lot of time into that. You know, we've got the similar personnel this year as we did last year, and so we're, you know, it's a deep dive on, you know, what's going on there, because it's not us, and it's not who we should be.
Richo.
Sorry, there we go. I'm in another studio, Phil, so we're just trying to communicate.
Seamless, Richard. It's all good, mate.
Oh, yes. All seamless. Mate, thanks for your time. Just interested in your take with Steve Canillo. You know that the pressures involved in being a captain at AFL level, but for him to take over first year of a new contract, and then we all know what's happened in 2020, the pressure is enormous for everyone, particularly when you're in the first year of a captaincy. Do you just think maybe he's tried too hard, Steve, with all the extra responsibilities of getting people up and motivated and consistent in this COVID period?
Yeah, it's a great question, Richo, because I think one thing we always knew about Steve, he had terrific leadership, you know, credentials growing up, and he's shown some terrific characteristics, and he was ready to go. It just shows you what a big job it is. I think that's one of the things that has been highlighted here. And I think, well, I can really empathise with him, because my first year of captaincy, my first few years, you know, I was, you know, as rough a diamond as anything. And you just need help to try to just, you know, shine yourself up to get to a certain level. And he's just going through what is a very tough job. It's a hard thing to do, to be a captain of a footy club. And I was very fortunate that made my life easier, was I had people like Luke Power at the start, but then Callan Ward was consistent there the whole way through to really share the load. And he's just a young leader who's trying to learn his craft from a leadership point of view, and trying to balance that with playing high-level footy on top of a year where the whole situation's so different, and you've got a side that's been inconsistent. You're trying to find ways to poke that fire and do all that. You know, there's been a lot of things that have, you know, taken up energy. And I think he's just working out the best way to balance all that. But the thing that I look for is character, and he's got it in spades. You know, you look at someone that had the option to say, I'll be rested or managed or written down as injured, and he says, no, I want to own, you know, the fact that he was omitted. And, you know, this week, you know, from all accounts, he's been front and square in all meetings and doing all those things that a leader should do. So that's a huge tick in the box of someone that, you know, has got the capability to keep growing that leadership role. He's already got, you know, a terrific framework.
Phil, I don't think it's ever really been explored as to why they changed the captaincy. Were you disappointed to lose it?
I think the captaincy was an interesting one, in the sense that both Cal and I loved it. We really enjoyed our time and doing it. And, you know, for me personally, I felt like every year I was learning something new, adding something, and becoming, you know, more well-rounded. I was fortunate to have it for 8 years with Cal, and it was a terrific experience. But you know, it got to a point last year where we sat down after what was a very disappointing grand final appearance, and we sat down, myself and the club, and we really explored, you know, what was best for the footy club. That's always been something that has been paramount to me and Cal, and that the decision was made to move it towards Stephen, because he was, you know, the next generation.
But you didn't tell us whether you were disappointed or not.
Oh no, it's definitely something that I love to do. But I think, you know, sometimes you've got to put your own pride or whatever it is to the side and do what's best for the football club. And you know, management had their view, Cal and I had our view, and we reached a position where it was time. You know, I would have loved to do it forever, Jared, but sometimes for an organisation, that's not always the best thing.
So can Phil, before you go, Richard, I just want to go back to Steve Cornelio, because this is a monumental decision made by your match committee and your coach, and I suspect management got involved in this as well. It hasn't got a lot of support from people that have been inside football. What about the playing? Well, why don't I just ask you, did you support the decision, or do you think they should have accepted the poor form, whatever it was, and just maintained, I guess, the faith in the leader to not break that relationship between the leader and the coach?
Yeah, I think it's a very, it's a very convoluted situation in terms of all the different, you know, forces that are pulling in different directions. But I think what it comes down to, from my point of view, is Stephen, Leon and the coaches, you know, in particular Stephen and Leon, have got an idea about what the footy club want to stand for and what they expect from the coaches, the playing staff and the whole organisation. And it must have got to a point over a long period of time. The one thing is, it's not, you know, one bad game and you drop the captain. We all know that's not how it works. And you know, there must have been a consistent theme for which they were discussing it over a long period of time, where it just wasn't getting done in a way that Stephen and the match committee would have liked it to. And Stephen's really owned that. He's really owned that his form wasn't up to standard. And I think whenever you're trying to build an organisation in a high-performance environment, everyone needs to toe their weight. No one can be immune from that. And I think you've got to back your leaders in for as long as you can. But between Stephen and the match committee, they made a decision that the time was right. And I think you've got to own that, because we're an inconsistent side, like we've discussed before. And, you know, if people are sacred and no one can be touched, I think there can be some things that occur within a footy club that aren't healthy. And that's why I'm so proud of Stephen and the club, that it was a huge decision. You never wanted to see it, but it sets a standard that, you know, this is what you need to do if you want to play for the Giants.
Richard, Phil, you got just, one more? Sorry.
Yes, mate. Just a word on Aidan Corr, who's leaving the club. I think he's nominated North Melbourne. Phil, you'd be disappointed to see him go, but he's exercising his right and the positive Jeremy Finlayson signing for 3 years.
Yeah, Richard, it's always a sad time of year when you get towards the end, because, you know, you play down a league, but then you get stories like Jeremy re-signing. Obviously, he's a prodigious talent, and you know, 40-odd goals last year, and I think he's kept it going every game this year. So he's definitely someone that's got a big future for us, which is, it's great to lock that away. On the flip side, you know, footy's a tough game, and these days with free agencies and 8 years of service, you know, Corey Aidan gave great service for 8 years. You know, he played some great football for us, had some issues with his bodies at times, but when he played, he did a terrific job, and we're disappointed to see him go. We obviously, you know, liked what he did on the field, and, you know, any time you've got a quality player, other people are going to come knocking, and unfortunately we couldn't match, you know, what else is out there, and whether it be North Melbourne or somewhere else, he's exploring that option. So it's disappointing. We've got some good depth in the key position back ranks, which is nice for us. You always want to keep them, but yeah, unfortunately, footy the way it is these days, you can't keep them all.
So one final one, Phil. We're running out of time, and we appreciate yours. You guys have the original Giants. You've been together for a long time, and you've been driven by this ultimate goal, and that is to win a flag together. But you come to this precipice in your development where, you know, you're getting to the end of this group's, journey together. And you've got this incredible couple of blokes who, one can go, Josh Kelly's got an out in his contract. Zach Williams, incredible part of your premiership hopes down the track. He's potentially going to go. And Jeremy Cameron has yet to sign. How does it work within the group? Because obviously there's the original Giants all together. Do you talk to each other? Do you discuss the realities of life? If you leave, we can't win, et cetera, et cetera? Or is it just every man for himself until you sign?
Yeah, it's a great question again, Joe. And I think from my point of view, what you're trying to always do is keep everyone on the same page and have a clear understanding of where you're trying to head. And that's the first and foremost. You need to have a really good vision as a footy club about what we want to achieve, and I think we've set that up quite well. We're in a really nice position in terms of our list demographic, you know, and unfortunately the AFL have put in things around, you know, salary cap, the draft, and all these other measures that try to equalise the competition. So you can't just hoard all the best players and pay them whatever you want, which then leads to a position where people have got to make decisions, you know, which is obviously some of the players you've mentioned before. And, you know, for example, my role and other roles of players is to go, is to remind how important people are to that, and then it's up to them to make a decision. You know, I look at a Jeremy Cameron who was here a year before I was. He did, you know, the NEFL year in 2011,
yep,
and has ridden the highs and the lows. He's been a two-time All-Australian, won our leading goal kicker every year. You know, he's been an instrumental part of the club, and, you know, all I say to people like Jeremy is, like, you know, he's a huge part of this footy club, and I hope he can see where we're going and how important he is in that. And then, you know, you can't force people to make decisions, and, you know, there's a lot going on this year more than ever, you know, in terms of a lot of other things that happened, whether, you know, it's been a greater, people have got greater importance on family, or is it money, or whatever it is, they've got to make their own decisions. But all we can do is, you know, keep on relaying how important it is, but they should also know that because of the history that they've seen. Like, Jeremy's seen it from the bottom, and so is Zach, and so is Josh, and you hope that it's embedded in them, that they, one, understand, but two, they can see the picture.
Phil, we appreciate you being so candid. It was a great interview. Good luck with your surgery.
No, thanks, guys.
Phil Davis there, former skipper and star of GWS. Lots to unpack out of that, Jared, although I know you hate me using that word. This is Sports Day for Kia and Red Energy. More after this. Welcome back to Sports Day. Yes, No, Richo is still to come. And Jared's been in the studio since about 4 o'clock, feverishly working on these Yes, No, Richos. He's got that look on his face that there are a couple of left field ones. So be ready, Richo. But before that, we're giving Richo another segment. It's all about Richo tonight. It's the Wednesday wine for catch.com.au.
I've been bleating about this for a while.
Richo, take it away, please.
Yes, so this is my Wednesday wine. I don't like the week off before finals, so I've never really liked it. And I like it less this year with the situation we've got with COVID-19. If you finish in the top four, you go into a qualifying final, you win that qualifying final, you don't then play. You can potentially only go into play one game in 28 days. It's too much. It's too little football and too much of a break, considering the cramming that we've done this year. I just would have loved it to just keep rolling and keep being a survival of the fittest.
Yeah.
Richard, has this got something to do still with that 2018 preliminary final when the Tigers got pantsed by Collingwood and the Richmond fans said they had too much break?
Well, that is coming from there, yes. I'll be honest with you.
Jared, seriously, can you believe that? He's still hanging on to 2018. They've won two flags.
May well be a personal issue, but you're on the money, Richard.
But it is. I mean, if I've got the Richmond supporter hat on, I'd say yes, but I still think that regardless. I just think you've been playing potentially four games in 15, 16 days, and then you go to a point where if you win a qualifying final and then go straight into a prelim, you're playing one game in a month and you're sitting in a hub twiddling your thumbs. I just reckon they should have kept going.
Mm. Couldn't have been in more disagreement with Jared and Richo, but who am I to talk? This is Sports Day for Kia and Red Energy. Yes, No, Richo, still to come.
Welcome back to Sports Day. Before Scoops gives us the ins and outs for North Melbourne and the West Coast, Richo, he's a pretty impressive performer, Phil Davis. You can see why he was such a valued leader.
Exactly, and that's why he was captain, Jared, because he's a really impressive person, Phil, quality person, quality leader. And is honest. He was honest, and he gave us some really good stuff there. But it was all really good.
It's amazing though that you could be elected captain so many years in a row. You get the side into a grand final, and all of a sudden, it seems like it was an administrative decision, a management decision.
Well, players didn't vote, so it must have been.
Which is unusual that you go away from the system that selects your captain.
I think you should always have your players involved in selecting the captain,
Yep, completely agree. North Melbourne and West Coast tomorrow night at Metricon Stadium. It is a 7:10 bounce. The teams are in, and there's some interesting selections. Sam Durden and Tom Murphy are in for the Kangaroos. Aiden Bonner is out injured. Mason Wood has been dropped again, Jared. He's been dropped again.
You'd be surprised if Mason was at North Melbourne next year.
Yeah, but we said that before and he keeps staying. Anyway, West Coast, Bailey J. Williams is in. Brendan Archie, Dom Sheed and Luke Foley out. Hamish Brayshaw's been dropped. Jared Brand has been dropped. Jeremy McGovern, we know, is out for some time. And Xavier O'Neill, who made his debut a couple of weeks ago, has been dropped. Richo, how do you see that one playing out? It should be on paper smooth sailing for the West Coast Eagles, who need to win if there are any small chance of finishing top four.
Yeah, of course. And I mean, every team wants a double chance. So West Coast, I expect them to tick that off. The only thing is, though, and if you were looking for a little sneaky sort of reason, West Coast are guaranteed that first final in Perth if they finish fifth. If they win this and snuck in, they potentially don't have a final in Perth. Oh. But they want to win. You want a double chance over a home final,
great
surely.
Great theories from Richo on Sports Day tonight. Yes, No is next. Welcome back to Sports Day. Richo is here for Macca's. The Monopoly game at Macca's is in full swing. Terms at mcdonalds.com.au. Lots of feedback for his Wednesday wine. Maybe a little bit Richmond-centric.
Just a little clip for you there, Scoop. If I had my Richmond scarf on, I would have said I loved having the pre-finals exactly. bye because Prestia has got an extra week to get right, and so has Tom Lynch. So just a little mischievous of you there, Scoopy.
He didn't like that one. Mm. Over to you, Jared.
Richo, hand on heart for yes and no. Nice intro, Scoop. Yeah. The Giants have missed their premiership window, yes or no?
Yes.
Lachie Neale should have been fined for a dangerous tackle.
No.
5 weeks ago, Richo, you said he was the favourite and couldn't be beaten. Right now, Lachie Neale is no longer a certainty for the Brownlow.
Yes.
The big O.
I knew what he meant. The little O.
Max Gorn looks to be still handicapped by his PCL injury, yes or no?
Yes.
Eddie Betts should make this his final year.
No.
Carlton should make this Eddie's final year.
No.
Collingwood can't win the flag unless Howe and Sidebottom return, yes or no?
No.
Nathan Jones should go on in 21.
No.
The Boxing Day test should be moved to somewhere with a full stadium, yes or no?
Yes.
Ooh.
If Geelong play Richmond at any stage in the finals, they cannot win the flag, yes or no?
No.
Aiden Corr is a surprise pick for North Melbourne.
Yes.
Richo, a bit of a transformation for yes and no. We've got two pieces of audio for you to listen to of iconic moments
in sport.
Jeez, no wonder you were in here early.
Here is the first one. It's the 4x100 metres Sydney Olympics final in the pool.
Paul is in front. What can the champ muster? A gold medalist earlier tonight. Now he's digging deep. The crowd is roaring. Their hero is coming on. Will it be a fairy tale? Thorpe is coming out off the hall. They're matching strokes now. Thorpe on terms with Hall. They've got about 15 metres to swim. Thorpe is overhauling him. Hall and Thorpe. Thorpe's in front. Thorpe and Hall. Thorpe goes in. Australia win.
That was the call of Dennis Cometti 20 years ago. Richo, this is an example of how you call a great sporting moment. Yes or no?
Yes, Cometti's the GOAT. And I actually got tingles then. That's how good that was.
A strong yes. Okay, here is our second piece of audio.
It's a game. It's not a match. A team.
It's Dominic Thiem's time.
3-6 victory. 2-6. 4-6. 6-4. 6-3.
At the US Open.
7-6.
Flat on his back at the moment. First of his generation to join the Grand Slam Champions Club. A fresh face. What a fight.
Richo, Dominic Thiem was the first bloke in 70 years to come back from being two sets down and a break. This was another example of how you call a great sporting moment. Yes or no?
No, I'm flat as a tack. Was that the US Open or the Long Island Invitational?
I think it was the Invitational.
You have backed over this one again, Jared, and you've used Richo as a vehicle.
It was flat, though, Scoot.
It was flat.
I mean, it was a pretty good comeback.
Pretty good. Common sense has prevailed for a rare time in Victoria recently with the decision, Richo, to go ahead with daylight saving despite some so-called experts wanting to cancel, yes or no?
Yes, common sense. Surely we can have a bit of daylight saving.
The small forward position, Richo, for you all Australian selectors, will throw up a smoky given the early season certainty stroke favourites Charlie Cameron, Dan Butler and Tom Papley have fallen from calculation, yes or no?
I can't answer that.
Jeremy Cameron, we'll take that as a yes. Jeremy Cameron still hasn't re-signed, as we know. He won't be at the Giants in 21.
No.
The Giants butchered the Cornelio decision.
Yes.
If Dan Andrews was a coach in the AFL, he wouldn't be coaching in 2021.
Yes.
On balance, that. Given the circumstances in which he took over, John Worsfold has been a successful coach of the Bombers. Yes or no?
Yes.
Carlton have had a poor year.
No.
Carlton have had an average year.
Yes.
Our Deputy Chief Medical Officer, Richo, said today, Nick Coatsworth, that the Victorian response to the pandemic was an example to the world. Nick Coatsworth is clearly delusional, yes or no?
Ooh, a little bit.
Needs medical help himself, yes or no?
I'll leave it at that.
We are running down the clock, Richo, so there's probably time for one more. Football in this era of 36 people in one half of the ground is a better product at home on the couch than at the ground.
Yes.
Great having you on, Richo. It's coming
Thanks,
up
lads.
To 7 o'clock. You are listening to Sports Day. It's all for Wilson Homes. They believe in great design, so you love being home. Big hour ahead in the second hour, Jared, our weekly chat with the Chief Brent Costello from Wind News in Tassie, of course. Former Aussie quick Peter Siddle will stop by with an important update on his situation in Tassie and also Pink Stumps Day. And our chat from earlier with former Giants skipper Phil Davis. And wasn't that intriguing what he had to say on his teammate and now skipper Stephen Cornelio? But it is, Jared, as we spoke to Andrew Gaze last night,
yep,
about the opening ceremony of the Sydney Olympics. It's now 20 years to the day since Australia won the men's 4x1 freestyle relay at those games. Just to re-jog your memory, here is how the last 50 metres of that race played out.
Around they go for the final 50. Paul is in front. What can the champ muster? A gold medalist earlier tonight. Now he's digging deep. The crowd is roaring. Their hero is coming on. Will it be a fairy tale? Thorpe is coming out off the hall. They're matching strokes now. Thorpe on terms with Hall. They've got about 15 metres to swim. Thorpe is overhauling him. Hall and Thorpe. Thorpe's in front. Thorpe and Hall. Thorpe goes in. Australia win. New world record! The Australians have just broken the American stranglehold on this race.
Oh, how good is that, listening to that?
Now, that is how you bring a big tournament home, Scoop. I don't want to go on again about the US Open.
Don't go back to it.
But that was a great call for a great moment.
That makes the hair on the back of your neck stand up, does it not?
Unbelievable. Unbelievable.
Michael Clem, I'm not sure how you feel listening back to that. But
he hasn't got any hair on the back of his head, like me.
I'm sure 20 years on, Michael, it still gets you tingling.
Mate, look, obviously I don't have any hair on my head, but the goosebumps on my arms, the hair is certainly standing up on those. And, yeah, it's so special still listening to that commentary. You know, it means so much to so many different people. Obviously, we were the underdogs. We didn't have the best team on paper. We're leading the Olympic team off to, you know, hopefully to a good start at the Games. And there was so much pressure, not only from the Aussie public and the media and everything, and just from ourselves as well. But the self-belief that we had, you know, the four of us, the six of us that swam in the morning, it's obviously great to talk about it. Now that we know the plan actually worked and we won, but the build-up was great, obviously, with Gary Hall talking about, you know, doing a bit of trash talk, building the anticipation for the event like he normally does, and unfortunately backfired on him this time.
Well, fortunately for us, because we're talking to you 20 years on, tell us what the plan was.
Look, generally the Americans, I mean, they, as Andrew Bailed in our commentary explained, they've had strangleholds on relays. And for us, when Don Talbert brought my coach over, Gennady Turetsky, in the early 90s, for us it was a big focus to take hold of those relay events. And we're never going to match the Americans in other events, but we could always... You know, we always swim above ourselves. And, you know, we won that event in 99, but we've never won it in a major competition. So to beat the Americans in the 4x1 freestyle relay at the Olympics has never been done before. So for us, that build-up was really important. And you know, the Americans like leading from the front. They don't like coming from behind.
Yep.
Our only basic tactic was to try and get in front, which I was lucky enough to do, and make the Americans overrace the splits and all the other boys swam the races of their lives as well and back-ending their splits, and the rest is history.
So our man actually led us off and broke a world record in the first leg of that 4x1, 48-1-8. Michael, really dumb question. You talk about tactics in a relay. How do they differ from team to team? Because, I mean, the obvious tactic is everyone just wants to swim as fast as they possibly can. So how do you actually sit down and talk about tactics and work out who's going to swim in what league and how that compares to other teams?
Well, as you know, I think the 4x1 freestyle relay is the fastest event in the water, and when it comes definitely for relays. So it's very hard to come from behind, and there's certainly a bow wave that sort of, you know, filters over to other lanes. So the Americans, if they were in front or even we were in front, they had to work a little bit harder each time to get in, on level par with us, or then even to get in front. So I think there's certainly tactics in that. How are you going to stack your relay? Are you going to put your strongest swimmers first? Or, you know, for example, the Russians had Popov going in third. So, you know, every team is different. But we kind of went, we didn't really have an idea. We had a very even split from a whole team. I mean, I was lucky enough to, as you said, break the world record, but the rest of the boys went almost within 0.1 of a second. So we were like, we were very much like clockwork. And the last 15 metres is where we won that relay in every single 100-metre split.
Have you spoken to Gary Hall much in the last 20 years?
But I have. I actually hosted a swim clinic with Gary in LA last year. And to be honest, he's a great guy. Yep. He's you know, he obviously put the sport on the map, and he has some great rivalries with Alexander Popov in the past, and many other swimmers. Obviously, he won the 50 freestyle in Athens and tied in Sydney. So he's a dual Olympic gold medalist. He's individually, but then obviously in relays, he's won many more. But you know, he actually regrets that comment, because it was in a Sports Illustrated interview where he says the Aussies are probably the team to beat, but we believe that we can still smash them like my Gibson guitars. And at the time, he was sponsored by Gibson guitars, and nothing. You know, he obviously got his plug in, but it backfired on him, as I said earlier.
It certainly did, but it put Gibson guitars on the map when you smashed your guitars, even though they were make-believe.
Yeah, exactly. And look, there's another story that people don't know. Gary, he was sponsored by Gibson guitars for many years. And after my week in the World Swimming Championships in 98, he gifted me a Les Paul Gibson guitar to say congratulations, well done on the week of swimming. So he's not only does he, you know, he brings it to the fight, but then when, you know, the swimmers are better, then he acknowledges the performance as well.
Can I ask you, outside of Cathy Freeman's run, what was your favourite event at the Sydney Olympics that you went to?
Wow, that's a tough one.
outside of the pool.
No, outside of the pool, that was
a tough one. Obviously, Cathy's being there at the track and watching that event was obviously, you know, experiencing 18,000 people going berserk to then obviously the whole Sydney Stadium just going bananas. That was, for me, to be sitting there and watching Cathy do her thing was amazing. But, you know, I went to a lot of the Boomers games. I enjoyed that. And obviously, I'm a big fan of Gazy. And, you know, he is an idol of mine. I used to play for the Melbourne Tigers. So, so for me to sit there almost courtside and going bananas with the late Peter Brock and Laurie Lawrence, where we didn't have tickets, guys. So basically, we just stormed the gate. So there was about a busload of Aussies rock up at the stadium, and we just stormed the gates, and they couldn't knock us back.
Did you get to Bondi at all? Because that was an epicentre of pleasure, enjoyment, excitement. You throw all the hedonistic descriptions up in and around a sport. It was unbelievable.
It was, and I had I'm not sure if you've got some inside goss, but I had a really surreal moment during the Olympics, because obviously, you know, the beach volleyball was still going on, and you know, Nat Cook and the girls were still winning gold, and I could see this amazing stadium. And one day, obviously, I had finished my swimming and I wanted to head down to Bondi. The Red Bull house was down there on the beach, and have a bit of time off. And I got there early, got my surfboard. I went for a surf, and I was sitting there, the sun was going down, and I'm thinking, hang on, I've just, you know, won two gold medals, and I'm surfing, and I'm in the, obviously having the time of my life almost, you know. And yeah, so if when it comes to pinnacles of a lifetime, that was sort of a bit of a surreal moment, just sitting there on a surfboard reflecting on what happened. But I paddled in and had a few more vodka Red Bulls after that.
Jared, you being the resident surfer of the show, the only thing more blissful than riding a nice wave would be doing it with a couple of gold medals around your neck.
I think that would have been the best anchor any man has ever worn in his lifetime. You do it in Victoria right now, you get fined $5,000. But I digress. It was an amazing couple of weeks. We spoke last night to Gazy. Just getting on a train was an experience, going to one of the events. The transport was free. Everybody had a smile on their face. It was just the most amazing 2 weeks in my lifetime from a work perspective. But I think the thing that was the glue in many respects for the Olympics were the volunteers who just made the whole thing hum.
Absolutely, Jared. And I remember vividly, this is, and it's still, in my mind, it's probably one of the standouts of the Olympics. So after that, the win in the 4x1 freestyle relay, we had, obviously, we swam down, we had the press conference, a drug test, and we didn't really have dinner till really, well, we're heading back to the village around midnight or maybe even later, and we're surprised how many people were still awake, and there was hundreds of volunteers that stayed up for us and waiting for us in the dining room. And as we walked in, they gave us a massive standing ovation. So, yeah, you know, obviously the Olympic Games would not have taken place without so many smiling faces. And, you know, they gave Sydney a really good name, I think. Obviously, yeah, you know, I don't think the Sydney siders have been that happy for a while, but it certainly didn't rain. The weather was magnificent. The volunteers were amazing. So, you know, there's no doubt it was the best Olympics ever.
Will you have a beer to celebrate with Thorpedo, Chris Friedler and Ash Callis?
Mate, you wouldn't believe it. I've just ordered an Uber, and then we're just heading out for some Japanese with the boys. And unfortunately, Ash Callis is in Queensland, so we've got a cardboard cutout of him to send him a photo. So what's the Instagram for tomorrow?
Well, enjoy the beer, enjoy the Japanese. It's well deserved, and I'm sure the memories 20 years on will still be as fond as they were on the day. Congratulations again, and we'll chat to you soon.
Thanks, fellas. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, good on you, Michael. Absolutely fantastic memories. Michael Klim, one of the greats
time that was
in the 4x100 metre relay. What an amazing way to kick it off.
And then we won for the 4x2 as well.
Yep.
He was part of that team.
Yep.
And he actually won silver in the 100 butterfly. So he had an amazing games, really.
A couple of things, Scoop, just to digress. Whilst we've been talking to Michael Klim,
yep,
on the back, on our screens, in behind your head and behind my head, there has been a bout in the mixed martial arts in the cage. Yeah. And if ever there was a never judge a book by its cover story, that just transpired. Because
what happened?
Well, this guy that they did the special on beforehand was this totally muscular, unbelievably fit, gifted, gigantic man, mm-hmm, who has gone in. Clearly he was the favourite because all the pre-match was about him. Mm. He's gone in and he has had the living daylights beaten out of him by a guy half his size. It was quite amazing.
David and Goliath sort of situation.
It was. It was quite incredible. And just one final one from the Bondi beach volleyball. It became so popular that it was the most scalped tickets outside of the classic events. But when Steve Price was giving out the duty roster, he said, "Who wants to go to the volleyball?" No one put their hand up.
No one.
And I thought, I'll go to the volleyball. I put my hand up and I went out there with Cornsy a couple of times, Graham Corns. Mm-hmm. Because he was silly enough like me to think that, okay, we'll go out somewhere off-site. Well, by the end of the 2 weeks,
everyone wanted to be
everybody
there.
Wanted to go there. And it was so popular, there was ambush marketing going on. And one day, we all turned up at about 2 o'clock for the final, and Burley decided that they would bring all their suite of Burley bra models along.
Right.
And they did this amazingly provocative, if you like, promotion.
Ostentatious.
Well, it was just because they were just there in the Burley gear.
Right. That must have been tough for you to watch.
Well, we just looked away.
Yeah, of course.
But it was just an amazing part where Bondi, it went from no one wanted to go up to there to everybody wanted to be there. And as I said, Red Bull had their tent there, so all the athletes wanted to go there as well. Amazing times in the life of Australian sporting
heritage. I never thought in one segment on Sports Day we would get Michael Klim, beach volleyball,
Burley bras,
MMA, and Burley bras into the same chat. But here we are. That was Michael Klim, by the way, joining us on Sports Day for Wilson Homes. They believe in great design, so you love being home. We'll be back after this. Welcome back to Sports Day. You're listening for Wilson Homes. They believe in great design, so you love being home. Now, earlier today, our star producer, Jared, Benny Jones, he spoke with former Aussie.
He stepped up, didn't he? He really stepped up.
As he always does.
He's looking for a spot.
Former Aussie. Sadly, now former Vic and now Tasmanian quick, Peter Siddle. Can you believe that? I'm not sure we're going to be referring to him as a Tasmanian. They discussed his new life in the Apple Isle, but more importantly, his role as ambassador for the Jane McGrath Foundation and new look to the Pink Stumps Day this summer, which is, of course, raising crucial funds for breast cancer nurses around Australia. Here was their chat with Benny.
Yeah, thanks, Jared. Thanks, Sam. Look, if you ask any Aussie cricketer, or even cricketing fan for that matter, what it's like to be at the SCG during a pink test in January, well, they're going to tell you quite simply, it is a wonderful, amazing spectacle, and of course, one that we know creates a huge impact right around the country. So, with that in mind, and with the McGrath Foundation starting its Pink Stumps Day initiative for the upcoming summer, there's a few little changes courtesy of COVID-19. We're going to find out about those. Let's catch up with one of our former greats, a man who on his 26th birthday provided one of the great sporting highlights this country has seen with a hat-trick at the Gabba, of course, in an Ashes test. But he is also, importantly, a Pink Stumps Day ambassador. And his name is Peter Siddle. He's been good enough to join us on Sports Day. Welcome, Sids.
Cheers, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Well, obviously, you've been there as a player and you've experienced what the pink test is all about. And I'm sure it's a wonderful feather in your cap, something you look back on with great pride. But now to get involved, not post your career, because, of course, you're still doing your thing for Tassie in the Shield and also in the Big Bash as well. What's prompted you to get involved a little bit further with the McGrath Foundation and Pink Stumps Day?
I think, yeah, just helping out and doing a bit more. I think, you know, as a player playing in the pink test day, like you said, was always an amazing opportunity, you know, to bring awareness over those couple of days as a player. But through that time working with Cricket Australia, we obviously had opportunities to help the McGrath Foundation go meet some of the McGrath breast cancer nurses, even have opportunities to, you know, hear some experiences from some of the patients that have been affected over the years and what the nurses have done for them since. So, yeah, when the McGrath Foundation and Glenn spoke with me about, coming on as ambassador, I jumped at it. And obviously, to be able to, just play a bit more of a part and hopefully, raise much-needed funds for the foundation.
Peter, I read some amazing numbers and amazing for all of the wrong reasons. I mean, if you're a cricketer, you're a batsman and you average 55, you're going pretty well. But I read that on average, 55 people will receive a breast cancer diagnosis each day here in Australia. I mean, that simply is staggering. And as I said, it's pretty alarming. Shows you just how significant this push to raise funds for the McGrath Foundation is.
Yeah, it is. I think like over the last couple of weeks, I've been given a lot of information on it and done a lot of reading, and it's quite sad, really. Like you said, numbers are usually a good thing around sport, but these are sad numbers. And I think playing these small things like the Pink Stumps Day, the initiative for this summer ahead, you know, hopefully raise enough awareness to help the community, but in doing so, raising money for the McGrath Foundation to distribute more of these McGrath breast cancer nurses.
Now, we have obviously been lauding our healthcare workers over this past sort of 6-7 months, and with good reasons, Peter. The work they're doing is incredible, so I'm not to suggest that any are more important than the others, but when we focus in on breast cancer nurses and the work that they do, we immediately think of the patient, the person who's going through the battle with breast cancer, but these nurses do so much more, providing this sort of free service that also provides a great support for the families that are caught up in all of this.
Yeah, that's right. I think as much help and how good our, you know, our health system is, they're always there. They're there for everyone. So I think a lot of the time, the patients can, you know, they can go back home, they can go away from the health system, and they lose a bit of contact with that support where they feel comfortable. And that's pretty much where the McGrath breast cancer nurses come in. They can help support them from a health side of things, but they can also, they're there for the families and for friends to help support them as a friend. And I think that's the thing that I've heard, that all the patients are so happy and helpful with is the support that they get as having these nurses as friends, being there for them, and can answer questions that sometimes they don't know. So having that support, and like you said, it is free to the patients. So it obviously, you know, it costs a lot of money to help get these nurses around the country, and so the funds always come in handy.
And that's where we're asking our listeners to get involved. Pink Stumps Day. Now, Sid's as an ambassador, you're going to tell us now. Clearly, things have changed. The world has changed a little bit in 2020. It's had to take a little bit of a pivot, I think we're calling it. But the initiative, as into how it'll be different from previous years. What can you tell us there, mate?
Yeah, so for most of the country, and it's probably going to be pretty similar. We're still going to be able to get out there, and you know, clubs are going to be able to run their Pink Stumps days. They're going to be able to run their, you know, weekends or whatever it might be through their local clubs. So for most part, it is going to be pretty normal. But we understand through these weird times that we're experiencing at the moment, it's going to be hard for some people as well. And I think the exciting thing is that, we there's another part where you can sort of stay in. You can register, stay in at your own house, in your backyard. You can pink up your backyard and have your own little pink day, Pink Stumps Day in your own house with obviously family and potentially friends if you can get a few people around. But also you can go virtual and do it over your social media. Obviously social media plays a big part in everyone's lifestyle these days. That's it's another small part that you can pimp up your social media, pink it up, and play your part, a small part in that way.
Yeah, I love it. As you've touched on, it is not just specific to cricket clubs. Anyone can get involved, and to find out all the details and to register your interest and your participation, and that's what it's all about, raising funds and awareness for the amazing work of the McGrath Foundation. Head along to pinkstumpsday.com.au. Just while I've got you, Pete, and I know you're very busy spreading the word on all things Pink Stumps Day, over the last few months, you've made the move, as far as your cricket is concerned, to Tasmania after a wonderful career with Victoria. And, of course, what you did with Australia goes without saying, over 200 test wickets. But life in Tasmania and acclimatising and getting prepared for the summer ahead, how's it all going for you, mate?
Yeah, it's going well. It's been good. Obviously, joining a new group is a little bit different, and trying to sort of, you know, get used to them and get in the way of life down here in Hobart. But, no, enjoying it. I think it's been great. Obviously, I don't want to say too much because you can get out and about down here and train and explore and stuff like that. But no, it's been great. Obviously, a new team and getting into cricket and getting closer to playing again. So I've settled well. But like I said, I think like everyone, we just want to get stuck into some cricket now. Get the summer of cricket started, and once that kicks off, I think everyone will get in the mood for cricket during the summer.
Yeah, no doubt. And this show goes to various parts of Tasmania, so I know a lot of cricket fans in that part of the country will be excited to hear that. Will you be fronting up in the Big Bash again with the Strikers, Sids? Is that going to be happening?
Still at the in the Big Bash with Adelaide. So, looking forward to that. It's going to be exciting. I think everyone knows how exciting the Big Bash is. And it might look a little bit different this year, but I think the exciting thing is that, you know, everyone's going to be up and about and excited to get amongst it. So, however it does get played and where it gets played, might be a little different, but Big Bash is always fun. 2020, it's an exciting game. Love playing it, so looking forward to getting that started later on in the year.
And the last one before we let you go, Peter, great to have you on Sports Day, is that obviously the Pink Test itself, that'll be held at the SCG, and still a lot to go under the bridge as far as the planning for that. But we know India are coming to Australia this summer, highly anticipated series. You'll be clearly an interested onlooker and as an ambassador for the McGrath Foundation, taking an extra interest. But that test series, I mean, Australia, India arguably the best nation in the world coming out here to try and obviously keep that mantle. It's going to be great watching, and obviously a big challenge for Steve Smith and all the boys to come up against one of the great powers of cricket.
Yeah, 100%. They're amazing test nation, I think, you know, nation in general in cricket. But I think, you know, we saw the last time they toured out here that how far they've come in, you know, putting together a side that can, you know, perform well in Australia and really put us up to the contest. And yeah, it's going to be an unbelievable series. Yeah, looking forward to watching it. It's going to be good to be able to just watch the series and not have to be worrying about nervousness about selection and all that type of thing. Now I can just enjoy watching the boys go about it and cheer them on. And yeah, exciting series. It'll obviously finish off at, with the pink test up in Sydney, so which is always a big one. But yeah, Virat Kohli, Steve Smith, bat off. I think everyone will be looking forward to that. And then you've obviously got the fast bowlers from both nations as well going head to head. So yeah, what more can you ask for? It's going to be some amazing cricket.
It's all really exciting, and so is what's happening with Pink Stumps Day. And you can find out all the details at the website, pinkstumpsday.com.au. And just keep in mind that the amazing work, as Peter has alluded to, of these 151 nurses currently funded. We want to get that number even higher, and the only way we can do it is with your amazing support for the McGrath Breast Care Foundation and also Pink Stumps Day, which is going to be fantastic later on in the year. Hey, Peter, thanks for your time. All the best with your continued pre-season as you gear up for life with Tassie and the Shield. And, mate, we really do appreciate your role and your efforts with the McGrath Foundation. Good luck with it.
Nah, cheers, guys. Thank you for the support.
Peter Siddle there with our producer, Benny Jones, on Sports Day. And a reminder about that website to get involved. It is www.pinkstumpsday.com.au. This is Sports Day for Wilson Homes. You can chat with one of their friendly staff today about personalising a home design to suit your individual lifestyle.
Welcome back to Sports Day. For Wilson Homes, they believe in great design, so you love being home. And, of course, for Polaris Off-Road Australia, follow them on Instagram today. Let's head south to the Apple Isle. Our man, the chief, Brent Costello, joins us. And, Brent, the big, big news. I'm told, little birdie telling me that the Kangaroos heading down to Tasmania is their new home. Yes or no, and welcome.
Gee whiz, news to me. If it is true, Jared, that would be a monster story. Where are you getting that from?
I haven't. I just made it up.
I can't believe you got sucked in, Chief. I can't believe you got sucked in by that.
Well, you guys are in the know over there. We're just off on the little island.
Well, Gutsy wouldn't
here.
Allow that, would he? Would he, Jared?
No.
Look, he doesn't want footy down
I think
there.
We'll do it again. Didn't roll off the tongue well enough. We'll start again. Here we go. Welcome back to Sports Day for Wilson Home Scoop. They believe in great design, so you love being home.
What's this big bombshell you've been spruiking?
I haven't been spruiking.
Yes, you
have. I've been reading in the newspaper that there's a huge bombshell surrounding the North Melbourne Footy Club.
Which newspaper?
Robbo has been declaring it on AFL 360 and in writing about it in the Herald Sun that there's a huge bombshell that is going to be unleashed surrounding North Melbourne. Brent Costello from Win News, the face of sport in Tasmania, joins us on the
line. He must
line.
Know.
Chief, welcome to you. It's whenever North Melbourne and Tasmania are linked, we always go to you. What is the bombshell surrounding North Melbourne? Have you any idea?
No idea, no. But love to have him here. Would love any AFL here. Sam knows that. So we love having any footy down here, any content we can get.
You don't want anyone down there unless it's your own team.
No, it's true. No, oh, I agree. No, give us our own team. Give us it, please.
Would you be prepared to negotiate for the Tasmanian Kangaroos? Yes or no? For a completely relocated side, yes or no?
It depends how far away our own team is. But with this COVID stuff, who
Let's
knows?
Let's say it was the only back, option. So. Let's say it was the only option.
Oh, if it's our only option ever, I would never, ever, if someone said you're never going to get a team, we'd have to take him up on that to get the content down here for sure. But I think everyone just still wants their own team.
Yeah. Just to be clear, Jared, you're not actually seriously saying that there's anything to do with...
No, there's a bombshell that Robbo keeps talking about, and I'm not sure what it is. It may well be that...
But if he's talking about a bombshell, why isn't he just saying what it is? I'm very
well,
confused.
I'm not sure he knows what it is. I think somebody at North said there's going to be a bombshell announcement. Now, that may be a big sponsor. It may be...
Josh Kelly.
It may be Josh Kelly. Well, it may be.
Aidan Corr. Aidan Corr is not enough of a bombshell?
Don't think that's a bombshell.
Oh.
Well, it might be a bombshell in reverse.
What do you mean?
Well, does Aidan Corr make him a better side? Probably makes them a better side.
Makes them better than they are.
Yeah. Yeah,
probably no, doesn't enough. Turn them into premiership contenders.
No, no.
Probably not as big as if they were going to relocate.
So who's going to win the flag from your eyes outside of Richmond, Brent? Because they're clearly the favourites. Do you think they've put away to the Cats' chances?
Look, it wasn't great signs the other night, was it? But, look, Richmond's going to be hard to beat. Probably have to be Geelong, I reckon. Port, though, you can't. Everyone's sort of putting Port under the carpet, aren't they? Sweeping under the carpet, but
you reckon they're favourites?
See, the Chief's been listening to me. That's the Chief has been listening.
No, he
to
hasn't
me.
Because you jumped off Carlton, then you jump back on, and now you're burning them because you're bitter and twisted.
Jared, as you know, I can sink any sort of ship.
Yes,
I can make a $1.40 horse run backwards. Yep. Whatever you need stopped, yeah, just come to me.
That's the finish of Port Adelaide's premiership chances, Chief.
Now, look, if they get a couple of home finals, and obviously not scared of playing on the road up in Queensland, they know it pretty well now, they're going to be pretty tough, I reckon. So if it's not Richmond, I reckon Port.
In all seriousness, Jared, just quickly as an aside on that.
Yeah.
If they do as Chief says, they got their first final at home, and then if they get a home prelim, and then if they're not playing Brisbane at the Gabba in a grand final, I mean,
well, even they are playing Brisbane.
I mean, no, I know.
The last time they played Brisbane this year, they got their pants pulled down.
But what we know is that it's not as though Port Adelaide are saying we have to beat Richmond on the MCG to win the flag.
No,
that's not the case this year.
They're in a wonderful seat at this stage.
They have to be a wonderful seat. If it's not the box seat, it's next to.
Sydney to Hobart, you got an update for us?
Yeah, not too much. It looks like they're sort of delaying it as much as they can at the moment.
What, the update or the race? The race kicks off on Boxing Day, has for a long time and probably will again, won't it?
Yeah, well, you'd hope so. Neil Cornish is the new Commodore at the CYCA and basically said they'll have an update in October as to what it might look like. And they're hoping things will be a little clearer by then. But at this stage, waiting in the wings for an answer to see what's going to be happening with it.
What's the latest on Jofra Archer?
Yeah, not coming, which is no great shock. Adam Griffith, the Hobart Hurricanes coach, floated this a few months ago that they wouldn't be interested in his services this summer only because of England's schedule and he wouldn't be available really for BBL cricket. So that's officially ruled out now. Big news was though last week, Petr Hanscom signing with the Hurricanes. Obviously wasn't offered a contract with the Melbourne Stars. So hopefully he comes down here with a point to prove and goes pretty well. He's obviously scored a BBL 100 in past days in BBL cricket. So I think he'll go all right filling in that spot left by George Bailey.
I reckon there'll be a lot of wags out there saying
wags
to their partners, get out of this place. Let's get out of Victoria. Let's go and play our sport somewhere, whether you're a cricketer or a footballer or a soccer player. Let's get the hell out of this joint so we can actually have a decent life.
Surely by January we'll be okay.
Oh, surely.
Unless the dictator locks us up again.
Well, there's every chance.
Well, I agree with you. You and I are strangely in the same boat when it comes to politics.
Oh, wow.
The Tasmanian Horse of the Year, Chief?
Yeah, it was actually a tie. The Inevitable got the job done with, of course, Mystic Journey. In the Cox Plate last year. But the Inevitable won the Silver Eagle up at Randwick last year. So that was a good result for a good local horse that did big things on the national stage. And obviously you can't look past Mystic Journey either. So the judges called it a tie, which I think is the first time in history.
Do you think there's anything the Chief doesn't cover down there?
Well, I'm about to find out with this question. Chief, between now and Christmas, I want you to come up with a destination that's a must-go-to destination in Tasmania.
Oh, great one.
For everybody listening. We're not allowed to go anywhere in Melbourne. So we're just going to dream about places to go.
A few options down there.
There's a stack of options, but I'm going to actually tonight test him out because he's had no chance to prepare.
Okay.
Somewhere on the west coast of Tasmania. Where is your must-go-to place on the west coast of Tasmania?
Oh, can I have a little bit, tiny bit more central? It's almost on the west coast. Not really on the west coast, but on the way to the west coast. Pump House Point, have you been there?
I haven't been to Pump House Point. Is that on the beach?
No, it's not. It's at Lake St. Clair.
Right.
It's an old pump house, and you can go and stay out in the middle of the water. And very, very nice accommodation, and obviously some walks around there you can do. So that would be my pick. It's a nice little hideaway for a weekend or a couple of days.
Pump House Point.
I'd suggest there.
Not Macquarie Heads doesn't get a run?
I'm not sure I've even been in Macquarie Head, Sam, to be honest. Not sure. I went to Strawn recently. Strawn's a beautiful part of the world. The West Coast's often forgotten about down here. It's all about the East Coast. But you've got the Gravel Oval at Queenstown too. Going to have a kick there. So, yeah, plenty of options on the West Coast, that's for sure.
Well, give us your favourite spot on the West Coast.
Oh, gee. Yeah, I haven't spent a lot of time there.
You picked the only part of his state that he doesn't know. Oh,
well, this is why I wanted to test him. What about the Arthur Pyman Conservation Area? Surely that's got some reasonable spots.
Yeah, so the Gordon River Cruise is always good.
Give me the best surf spot on the West Coast. My mail over there is you've got to wait for the swell to drop off rather than turn up.
It's too cold for surf down there.
No, it's not too
cold.
That's what wetsuits are. I mean, they've got
near Antarctica. What are you doing down there surfing?
Well, they've got one of the great surf spots in the world, Shipstern Bluff.
Where's that?
Yes.
That's on the East Coast. But that gets more coverage than most Australian wave Shipsterns on a world scene.
Yeah, it's pretty popular. A lot of the big names have been down there over the journey as well. So yeah, you gotta mostly have to boat in there, Jared. I'm pretty sure it's a pretty pretty long hike if you're walking.
Yeah, it's a big walk. Most people get in there by jet ski or by boat and launch the jet ski. I haven't had the great privilege of surfing there, unfortunately. I might have been lucky not to have surfed there, but I have walked to a point where I could see it. And next time I'm over there, Chesty, the world's greatest fisherman out of Constitution Dock, he has promised me that he's going to take me around there because he does most of his fishing on the West Coast.
It's where he gets all the good produce.
Well, he goes over there abalone diving and flathead fishing, but he's prepared to just park the boat on the East Coast and just have a decent look at Shipsterns next time it's on. Any other news for us, Chief? Don't forget, we are going to just hit you up for some of the great spots to see in Tasmania, so be prepared.
I will. No, I'll have the list ready for you next week, gents. I'll get to work on that and put a few of my favourites down for you. No problem at all.
Thanks, Chief. Chief Brent Costello there, the face of sport in Tasmania. For DrinkWise, stay safe, self-isolate, and if drinking, please DrinkWise. You want to roll off a couple of the obvious ones down there? Wineglass Bay, go down there to Bunboogle, Battery Point, Salamanca. Where else do you like?
Well, I hope he's going to come up with a few more than that.
Well, obviously. I'm just mentioning some obvious
ones.
Yeah,
no, they're good ones. They're the ones that we don't need from Chief.
No, that's right. We want
those hidden treasures.
That's right. We want the individuals. We want the ones that the tour books don't tell you about. That was Brent Costello. More Sports Day still to come for Wilson Homes. You are listening to Sports Day. It's all for Wilson Homes. They believe in great design, so you love being home. Now, earlier tonight, we spoke with former captain at GWS and now the injured Phil Davis. A fascinating insight from the former skipper into the issues currently surrounding the club's current captain, Stephen Canelio. Here is our chat with Phil Davis.
You're in an interesting spot, Phil. There's a fascination, I reckon, in the footy world about the Giants. And when you're in the bubble, it's probably difficult to assess as much as when you're outside of the bubble. Well, you've been both inside and outside. Do you understand this fascination with the Giants, given the way they were formed, given the success that you've had, the almost premiership success, and then this unbelievable season where you've been sort of flat for a fair period, a couple of ups, and then at this stage you've finished the year making this incredible decision to drop your captain?
Yeah, I think it's definitely been a narrative that, you know, you haven't been able to escape as a member of the Giants. You know, I understand how the club was built and all those facets, you know, led to, you know, a certain dialogue that followed us throughout, and that predominantly revolved around not only, you know, talent, but also a part of it of which, you know, talent always outweighed substance and issues of, you know, keeping players, and that was always flying around. Then we got to the period where, you know, the last sort of 4 years when we've been at the pointy end of the table and haven't been able to get it done, and, you know, that's left a lot of people bewildered, and, you know, that's come with it. And I guess from my point of view, you know, it's a hard competition, it's a ruthless competition, and, you know, we obviously haven't done enough right for a long enough period of time to have the ultimate success, and that's something we've been striving for. And then if you look at, you know, current day, you know, some of our behaviours this year have been extremely disappointing. You know, we've been up and we've been down, as you say, and that's not what good teams do. Good teams aren't, inconsistent like we are, and you know, and then you know, all of a sudden, you know, Stephen is omitted last week, and you know, that's obviously a big exclamation mark. But if you actually looked across our form as a team the whole year, as you'd stated before, you know, we have been inconsistent, and it hasn't been good enough to land us in a position where, you know, our fate's in our own hand.
Before I hand you over to Richo for a couple of questions, can I ask you just to explore that, I guess, inconsistency of form and whether or not you can put your finger on it? Because from the outside, I saw you play an amazing game against Geelong. I know Geelong kicked in accurately, and the margin probably flattered you to a small degree. But in round one, before you had the break, you looked as if you were ready to take some sort of revenge on the big loss in the grand final. Then we had the 8 or 9 weeks off in the break. Do you feel as if the break you lost your way a little bit, or did you train really hard? Were you concerned at all about how you came back from the break?
Yeah, it's a good question, Joe, because I must admit, I thought our pre-season was outstanding. You know, I thought the boys came back in terrific shape in November and December last year. And, you know, we had a lot of blokes running PBs. Everyone was in terrific shape. We had a really good pre-season, almost faultless. And then we had a really great NAB Cup campaign, or sorry, JLT Cup campaign. And then, yeah, round one was terrific. I thought we played a really good style. You know, there were a few things that we had to tinker with. So everything was sort of rosy at that point. Mm. And then, yeah, the break was a fascinating one, because I must admit, we trained really hard. Like, our sort of numbers when we came back were really good. But I probably think, you know, you can probably see in our first two games against North Melbourne and the Doggies after that, we weren't sharp compared to the other teams. And that's something that I found a little bit bewildering, just because of the physical shape that we were in. I thought we'd all done the work, you know, to a hugely accountable level over the break. But that mental sharpness and ferocity that we'd showed in round one and the back half of last year wasn't there, which was really disappointing. And I guess that's probably been the thing that's fluctuated. But with that, you know, our confidence has probably fluctuated, which is disappointing, because you don't want to be a side that relies on confidence. But we've probably just fluctuated more than we'd like. And to pinpoint that, it's really challenging. That's something that we're working feverishly behind the scenes on, is trying to work out where that's gone, because I thought we found a really nice formula for the last sort of 5-6 weeks of last year. But consistency is what we're striving for. And, you know, the good teams, you know, I look at West Coast on the weekend, they probably had 5 or 6 of their best 10 not on the field, and they find a way to win. And they're just a super consistent football club. So at Richmond, you know, that's something that we're really striving for. And so we're putting a lot of time into that. You know, we've got the similar personnel this year as we did last year. And so we're, you know, it's a deep dive on, you know, what's going on there, because it's not us. It's not who we should be.
Richo.
Sorry, there we go. I'm in another studio, Phil. So we're just trying to communicate.
Seamless, Richo. It's all good, mate.
Oh, yes. All seamless. Mate, thanks for your time. Just interested in your take with Steve Canillo. You know that the pressures involved in being a captain at AFL level, but for him to take over first year of a new contract, and then we all know what's happened in 2020. The pressure is enormous for everyone, but particularly when you're in the first year of a captaincy. Do you just think maybe he's tried too hard, Steve, with all the extra responsibilities of getting people up and motivated and consistent in this COVID period?
Yeah, it's a great question, Richo, because I think one thing we always knew about Stephen, he had terrific leadership, you know, credentials growing up, and he's shown some terrific characteristics, and he was ready to go. It just shows you what a big job it is. I think that's one of the things that has been highlighted here. And I think I can really empathise with him, because my first year of captaincy, my first few years, you know, I was, you know, as rough a diamond as anything. And you just need help to try to just, you know, shine yourself up to get to a certain level. And he's just going through what is a very tough job. It's a hard thing to do, to be a captain of a footy club. And I was very fortunate that made my life easier, was I had people like Luke Cow at the start, but then Callan Ward was consistent there the whole way through to really share the load. And he's just a young leader who's trying to learn his craft from a leadership point of view, and trying to balance that with playing high level footy on top of a year where the whole situation's so different, and you've got a side that's been inconsistent. You're trying to find ways to poke that fire and do all that. You know, there's been a lot of things that have, you know, taken up energy. And I think he's just working out the best way to balance all that. But the thing that
I look for is character, and he's got it in spades. You know, you look at someone that had the option to say, I'll be rested or managed or written down as injured, and he says, no, I want to own, you know, the fact that he was omitted. And, you know, this week, you know, from all accounts, he's been front and square in all meetings and doing all those things that a leader should do. So that's a huge tick in the box of someone that, you know, has got the capability to keep growing that leadership role. He's already got, you know, a terrific framework.
Yeah, good to hear from Phil Davis there. Another big show done, Jared. Back tomorrow from 6 as the final round of this incredible season gets underway, of course, with the Roos and the Eagles.
Do you want to backtrack? Is Lachie Neale a certainty or not for the Brownlow? Yes or no?
No, he's not a certainty.
Okay, not a certainty.
What did
you've backflipped.
Did I say he was a certainty?
You said he was a certainty 4 weeks ago, and now you're backflipping.
Remember I told you a story about how it started last year? I backed him at 50 to 1.
You did, yeah.
Doesn't matter now, though, does it?
No, it doesn't. Because
he didn't win.
No. And you didn't back it up. Nevertheless, we're not here to tell people who to punt on.
This has been Gamble Responsibly. This has been Sports
Stay
Day.
Tuned, you might hear,
for Wilson Homes. Chat with one of their friendly staff today about personalising a home designed to suit your individual lifestyle. Jared, I'll be back from 6 tomorrow.